Hello and welcome to the second episode of Hot Air in 2019. My name is Greg Esser. Hot Air, of course, is the DC Breeze AUDL franchise's podcast about what is going on in the world of semi-professional ultimate in the nation's capital. This week is an exciting one. We are on the precipice of starting the season. DC Breeze go on the road this weekend to battle against the New York Empire and play a Saturday, April 13th game in the Big Apple. They return to DC the following week. That's Saturday, April 20th, to play their home opener, and that will be against the Philadelphia Phoenix. So in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be able to make a lot of sense of the early season roster decisions. There's been a lot of speculation. The D-line, as I alluded to 2 weeks ago when I interviewed Coach Daryl Stanley, D-line has changed a lot this year. And that's, I think, my point of biggest concern. They're bringing back outstanding performers from 2017 in David Shields and David Bloodgood, two guys that actually got very limited reps last year. But even if those two guys return to form, the rest of the D-line has, dare I say, been gutted. They've got guys like Alexander Fall and Joe Richards that in a limited role last year excelled on the D-line. They actually led the team in blocks per point played, although Joe Richards only played in 8 games and Alexander Fall even less. It'll be interesting to see as those guys transition to a more full-time role on the D-line if they're able to keep up those great numbers. They've got a plug and play, though. That's even that. There's only, you know, 4 players on a D-line that tends to run a little deeper. You want fresh legs out there late in the game, putting pressure on throwers. It'll be really interesting to see in this opening early weekend how guys like Matt Colum, a guy that I've coached, actually, and I know can be a great player on a D-line, will be interested to see how he does, what role he's ending up playing. I'm assuming he slots in as a D-line player. I've heard whispers of that, and even Daryl mentioned something to that effect 2 weeks ago on the podcast. Guys like Kyle Vezina, Chris Harrison, I actually had an opportunity to match up against in some early season looser play, just getting reps in this early season, in this early April. And he played great, so it'll be interesting to see how he transitions to a bigger field as a big body himself. I'm keeping an eye on Ray Mendoza, a guy that I've also marked up in the last couple weeks against. See if he slots into a D-line spot and see what he can bring to the squad. What I'm not worried about, and I think there's a lot of kind of skeptics about the Breeze in this, you know, in the media headlines across the AUDL, you know, this team, a lot of turnover, very dangerous, but their O-line, I think, is still going to be very solid. They're bringing back a lot of top-level contributors from previous years. They still got Rowan McDonald, Max Castle after an injury laden, 2018, coming back this year, and should get some more reps in, feeling healthy, talked to him the other day. Jeff Wodach is back. Another former MVP candidate, former player of the week in the AUDL. Zach Norbum's there. Nathan Pryor's there. And I think particularly about those last two, you know, these are kind of throw-and-go, smaller handlers that have every throw, don't turn over the disc, and it'll be really interesting to see how they play this year. And particularly, I think their skills are going to get put to the test against a team like New York. You see Brian Jones come in there, a guy that most recently has tested strategies of synthesizing man defense or person-to-person defense and zone defense. And with guys like Norbum and Pryor touching the disc so often and not being willing to throw those turnovers, it'll be interesting to see how they perform against that defensive schematic. So enough words out of me off the top. We do have Anthony McLean coming up here. I want to thank our sponsors, Papa John's Pizza, Oak Creek Apparel, Spectrum Management, and Forest Planet. Sticking with the Breeze, all three were there last year. All 4 were there last year, and excited to see their names on the list once again this year for making the DC Breeze happen. I'll kick it over to Brooke Royals, and we'll get on with this interview of Anthony McLean. Thanks for listening. Great. So today I'm sitting down with Anthony McLean. It is his first time on the program, but his third time on the Breeze. You've been thrice heralded as a DC Breeze rookie. How does that feel?
It's fantastic. You know, it's the Ben Simmons career. You know, you gotta sit out 1 year, or you know, you do what you need, and then you just keep claiming yourself as a rookie,
and everyone forgets about your playing style. You come back in.
Exactly. Yeah. And you just come out and make some plays, and Do it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, having played twice before, in 15 and 2016, what has changed about you, the man, about you, the player, in the 2 years since you played?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd say the biggest thing has been my overall health. Not a lot of people know this, but in 2016, I was battling a variety of injuries throughout the AUDL season and also, like, transitioning into the club season. And then I also, at the end of the 2016 club season, I had a surgery right in the middle of August and essentially sat out the rest of the club season. I think I played, like, 3 pity points at Club Nationals with Ambiguously Gray because Jarnell was like, do you want to go on the field?
And then, Ambiguously Gray, of course, is your club team, your amateur team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
Or at the time, I guess they're no longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they transitioned out after the 2017 club season, which ended up becoming Rally, which is a mixed team that's around now.
Okay. But so that year for the Breeze, battling injuries, but you still put up, I think, 50 to 60 points on the field.
Yeah.
Despite those struggles.
Yeah, and it was one of those where, at that point, Sarah Ito, who is actually also a George Mason University alumni, her and I were very close friends, and she knew about my injuries and was always asking, like, hey, like, how are you? How are things going? Like, you know, don't push yourself too far if you don't need to. Like, you know, we'd love to, for you to continue to play, but we don't want to push you into a rut, like, further than you need to be in. So to hear that support from a coaching staff of, like, hey, like, you still have a lot left you can do. Like, there's no need to, like, give it all out on the field right now was really supportive to me. So it was nice to be able to say, like, ooh, like, my body's just not feeling it this weekend. Like, I don't have the opportunity to play.
Yeah. So you have overcome these health issues, taken the time that you needed, and then made a triumphant return last year, at least, to the club scene,
yep.
Going to Nationals. But so then maybe either whether it's that space you've taken physically and mentally from the game or the skills that you maybe focused on last year in the club season, what do you think, if anything, has changed about your game then in the last 2 years?
I would definitely say my throwing capability. When I was injured, you know, you can't move as fast as you want to, but you can still work on your throws, which was really nice. So last season I had the ability to really focus on being a cutter that could throw. When I was in college, I was coached by Daniel Cantor, you know, former truck, former ring. And he always said that, like, some of the best players on the field were those that could cut and throw.
Uh-huh.
And for me, like, I always wanted to be that. And when I watch Ultimate, I look up to the bigger and taller players that are doing that. And, you know, someone who I hold as, like, an idol of mine is Jimmy Mickel. And Jimmy Mickel is someone who is, you know, 6'5", 6'6", and is, like, going out there and throwing 70, 80-yard hucks. And I'm like, I want to be able to do that. And, you know, throughout 2018, like, I transformed my throwing game and now can, like, you know, rip a 65-yard backhand to the breakside, which is one of my, like, more fun throws.
What was your strategy for upping that throwing game? Are you out there with a soccer net? You're out there with a teammate? You're in the weight room? What do you attribute to gains in throwing?
So my gains in throwing, I would say, came from me coaching my alma mater, George Mason University, last year.
Uh-huh.
So anytime that they had practice, if I was ever implementing a drill that needed a thrower, like, I would purposely be the main be the main thrower. You know, let the handler cycle in, of course, but, like, I would purposely be out there and be like, all right, like, let me see if I can throw this with precision and, like, you know, get it to where I really wanted it to be. And, you know, with a college team, they're practicing 3 times a week, so I was putting up, like, you know, probably thousands of throws a week just from constantly being out there with them. And, you know, college kids go forever and, you know, just want to keep running deep. So it was an ability of mine to work on.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm coaching a high school team myself right now and putting up a lot of the throws I didn't even think. It's a mutual benefit.
Absolutely.
So last time you were on the Breeze again, to harken back to the good old days, make the Breeze great again, 2015, 2016, your coach was Alice Gesquier, a.k.a. Dutchie.
Yep.
And this will be the first time you're working with Daryl Stanley.
Yeah.
I had Daryl Stanley on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and he already knows about you. I often say that that there's a Coach Stanley player, a guy that kind of needs to play a crossover role. Maybe he's not on the first O-line, maybe he's not on the first D-line, but he is often the seventh guy on either one of those when Daryl kind of creates this six-person line. They know what to do, but there's a guy that maybe can mentally get behind both causes of offense and defense. Maybe he is a flexible person that can slot into one of those lines. He touted you as that potential guy for 2019. Do you think yourself as an O-line or D-line player, and how do you feel about being in that conversation? A lot of questions.
Of course, a lot of questions. So I think, you know, first I have to say thanks, Daryl. You know, I think there's just some big shoes to fill heading into this season.
I don't know the size of Ryan Swift's shoes, but that's, I think, what we're talking about here. He's played that role in the past.
Well, Swift, if you wear a size 14, let me know and we can
swap cleats.
Swap cleats once in a while. I would say, like, it's kind of an honor to be mentioned like that, because I think Daryl and I have known of each other for a while just from playing Ultimate in the DC area, but never had the chance to meet up until probably about, like, I'm going to say 8 weeks ago. And it was one where when I was at that first tryout and I was just like, hi, like, I'm Anthony, like, you know, and he was just like, oh, like, it's finally nice to, like, put a face to the name as opposed to just having, like, this email chain back and forth.
A shoe to the face.
Exactly. when it came to, like, you know, my preference of being on offense or defense, I was, you know, all through college, I was an offensive player. Most of my club career, I was an offensive player. But I was always someone that continually sought out the opportunities to be someone. You know, you put me on a line and, you know, someone's like, oh, who can handle? You know, I'll put my hand up if that's where we need to be, if, like, no one else is going to say anything. Or, you know, who wants to go take, you know, the tallest player on the field? I'm down to go do it. Like, let's go make this happen. Like, let's put some jump balls up and, like, see who comes down with it.
Got it.
You know, if I had a preference, absolutely the O-line. You know, I mean, I will go deep every day for a Zach Norbaum or a Rowan McDonald hook.
Yeah.
100%, you send it. Like, let's make that happen.
Sure. You alluded to it, though, having played some defense, your 2016 time was shortened, as we talked about, but primarily D-line. So you have played that role even at the semi-pro level.
Yeah. You know, I would say that I'm really excited to have the opportunity to play on both lines, because I think, you know, if you just look at the East Division, there are some tall players that we are going to come across and some very athletic ones.
Yeah, what do you make about this first home game away at New York, the reloaded New York Empire?
I think we have the opportunity to go in with a chip on our shoulder, because, you know, I think Daryl alluded to it last week that, like, no team anywhere has film on us. You know, we have a more of a fresher roster, and there are a couple guys on the team, or more than a couple, but there are players on the team who have been around last year, but now we have new artillery.
Or all the way back to 2013, if you're talking about Zach Norbaum.
Yeah. Well, baby Zach.
18 years old, making that roster.
I think we do have the opportunity to go out there and play a special type of ultimate that, you know, the Daryl Stanley way, and that if no one has watched us play this way before and we have these incredible athletes on our team, having a younger team, some of these kids are still in college and are finishing up their final years there, and they're quick. They are some of the players where I'm just like, oh, you got it. I'm like, help, you know, like, we need to switch on that. I'm really excited to take on the East, and I think our first away game is going to give us the opportunity to really ball out and to really show what we can be made of.
So we just mentioned Zach right there, a young guy, but a guy that's been on the scene for a while. DC recently has really turned out, and Daryl alluded to this as well, a lot of young guys, some college programs that have broken through and gone to nationals in Maryland and Georgetown last year.
Totally.
And therefore, those high-caliber athletes have come with that. Is there a guy or several players on the team that you are most excited to see that have been that seems crazy to ask a 25-year-old, but that next generation guys in D.C.?
So I think someone who I'm really excited to play with is Joe Richards. So Joe and I have had the opportunity to play with each other on a variety of, like, smaller, like, you know, for fun hat league tournament teams. But Joe and I haven't had the opportunity to play in a larger caliber like this. And Joe and I have similar playing styles where if that disc goes up in the air, we're going to get it. We're going to, you know, we're going to jump through the roof to come down with something. And, you know, we're going to sprout wings and just kind of, like, fly away with it. And Joe is also very, very quick. I mean, we had the opportunity to go down and scrimmage Mary Washington. And, I mean, Joe is a force. He's a driving force of that team.
Yes, and your college team is still playing against Joe Richards at Mary Washington.
Yeah.
How about that? Coach against him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, going down there since, you know, Mary Washington is now Zach Norbaum-less,
you know,
they're relying on other players. And, you know, Joe, along with other players that are on that team, I mean, they're becoming better and better. And I think when I was in undergrad, you know, you'd say, like, the top, like, three or four players of each roster were pretty good unless you competed against some of, like, the top series. But, like, now you're playing against these college teams that are, like, 10 to 12 deep of some of the best players. And, I mean, if you were to pull up the colleges of people who play on the Breeze right now, I mean, I think we have, like, five or six active UMD guys that are doing both. You know, they're playing UMD and they're playing the Breeze, which is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something to be said. So actually, I'll jump ahead just a little bit to what we had discussed we were going to talk about in your own context, but also guys that are coming right out of a college season. Hey, maybe there's an advantage because they've already been going hard all spring and they've got those legs underneath them. But something you've talked about in the past and you and I have talked about in the past is just about burnout.
Yeah.
You know, how do you personally prevent burnout, and do you feel it for some of these young guys that might be having a three-peat of a season this year? They're going college, they're going semi-pro, and then they're playing potentially amateur club in the fall.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say, like, when it comes to burnout, really making time for yourself is so important. And that's not like, that's time for yourself that isn't with your friends that are also on the same teams that you're already playing on.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I always make the joke that if you get two or more ultimate people in a room, and if you bring a bunch of people who have, like, outside of the community, we're still going to talk about ultimate. And then the rest of the group is just kind of like, hey, can we, like, talk about something else? Because we have no idea what you're talking about.
Isn't that the truth?
And I think, you know, really taking time for yourself and trying other things and opportunities. You know, I mean, I technically took off, like, the 2017 season of every type of ultimate for, like, the first, like, 9 months. Not that I didn't touch a disc, but when it came to playing competitively, I was like, no, thank you. I'm okay. Like, I really just don't want to participate, and was able to focus on, like, you know, my graphic design abilities. And I mean, even in 2017, I did a couple things for Don when it came to the Breeze, because that, like, helped me stay within the community, but I wasn't, like, physically exerting myself out on a field.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it just kind of came to, like, finding different interests that, you know, I understand, like, ultimate is something that everybody is super passionate about, but sometimes it's stepping away is also really
important. Sure. There's an interesting piece of that conversation too, which is, you know, just you're making me think that the ultimate community itself is becoming a little less monolithic. There are ways, you know, you mentioned, you know, hey, I've got this interest outside of ultimate, graphic design. How does that marry up with ultimate? Hey, you know, I'm really passionate about gender equity within the context of Ultimate Frisbee. I don't need to be on the field to be influencing this. I can drive a conversation off the field. Coaching, playing, you know, all the different facets of, as the sport grows and gets, you know, more diverse in terms of the age groups and youth programs start up, and it comes into DC high schools and that type of thing. There's lot of ways to find your involvement and maybe not just burn out your legs.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that we as players who are involved in, you know, more than just one team a year, and whether that's even like your click leagues and things like that, sometimes saying no is the hardest decision, but it's sometimes the best decision.
Yeah.
And even if it's with your best friends and your roommates and you're going out and doing this, and they're like, oh, but it's only every Sunday from like 2 to 4. Like, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's still...
Those are prime napping hours.
Yeah, exactly. You know, substitute it with something else. If you want to go play Frisbee, just say no and go take a nap. I think that sounds like the best solution.
One of the other ways that you have, I think, engaged at least disc sports, but not in an ultimate context, was a viral video that I caught this past off season, in which you were throwing trick shots dressed up like a Mario brother. Tell me more about how that came about.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was our Super Mario trick shot video that I did with some of my friends from college. So that was actually our third trick shot video.
Okay.
Yeah, we shot
one. I only caught the one. Now I need to go back into the archives.
I recommend it. You know, I think if you just put in George Mason Ultimate Trick Shots, I think that pops up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, like, that first video we did, it would have been like late 2013.
Okay.
I think that one also has like 250,000 views.
Catch a young Anthony McClain, no less.
A very young, very small.
Did you still have a bowl cut?
No.
No bowl cut.
No bowl cut. I think that was something where we had a friend who had a kindling YouTube channel and really wanted to highlight his friends on his channel because he loved producing and putting together videos and was, you know, looking for ways to bolster his own portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And myself and my other friend Brendan, you know, just having Frisbee throwing skills, he was just like, let's do something with this. He was like, what can we do? What would, you know, be something that we could do on campus?
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. So that came the first trick shot video. We did a second one that was at a skate park, and then this third one came around with the Super Mario.
So how did the Mario Brothers get wrapped up in this?
We sat around, I think we actually went to the Green Turtle in Fairfax before they actually closed.
Okay.
We sat around and, like, ordered, like, a massive plate of nachos, and it was like, what are we going to do? Like, what is this next video going to look like? And then essentially we just, like, pulled out our phones and started to, like, look up, like, what other people were doing and, like, what was really trending at the time. And we came across that the new Super Mario game was about to come out. And I think it may have been maybe like timed up with the Switch release, I think.
Okay.
And, you know, we just wanted to do something in that aspect, and it was like, okay, like, what do we do? And we turned it into this, like, parody skit type of, like, Tinder date, what are we going to do to compete to, like, win Peach over?
Yeah.
It was a fantastic time, and I think it's one of those where, like, every time somebody brings up the video, it's always weird for me, because I'm like, oh, right, like, that exists. Like, people are still watching that, and yeah. I think it's got, like, close to, like, 300,000 views right now,
wow.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that makes you probably, I don't know if I'm leaving out anyone here dangerously, but I guess the second most viral player on the Breeze behind Rowan and his throwing tutorials on the internet.
And believe it or not, Rowan's YouTube channel is taking off. I was just on it, I think, earlier this week. That, like, I mean, he's got throwing, and now he's also vlogging, which I think is incredible. And he's talking about, he's going through the
lifestyle stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the lifestyle of, I guess, an elite ultimate athlete.
Yeah. No, it's cool and worth checking out as well. So then, talking about the ultimate lifestyle, you also are just coming off, I guess you just left recently, but a job that was also in the ultimate complex, working for Alti Photos. Tell me a little bit about what that was like, and maybe if there, you know, what kind of things, new perspective did you see, or things did you gain from working with Alti Photos?
Yeah, for sure. I think what people don't realize is, like, how large Alti Photos is actually, like, of a company.
Yeah.
The team.
But they shoot solely ultimate.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we essentially go to youth, club, college, international, and I mean, you go to their website and there's like hundreds and maybe pushing 1,000 or so photo albums from, I think, all the way back to 2012, I believe was the first year, maybe 2011, when like Kevin LeClaire, who was the owner and founder of the company, really started to push it into a completely different capacity. And I, for the past 3.5 years, were their social media manager and graphic designer.
Got it.
And being able to see Ultimate from a completely different perspective of, you know, I was still playing on my own respective teams, but then I also got to be at events where I could, like, be on the sideline with some of the photographers and, you know, rep an Alti Photos jersey. And, you know, sometimes, like, my own teammates were like, oh, yeah, I forget that you do that. And, you know, it was an incredible experience because there are, like, myself and then maybe, like, Jolie Lang and sometimes Kevin, we are the only people who would essentially flip through every single Alti Photos album.
Every photo.
I would say for the past 3.5 years, I have seen every single photo that has ever been uploaded to Alti Photos.
Well, then tell me this. Is there a photo that folks listening should go online and try to find as like one of the best of Alti Photos, in your opinion, having this perspective that you do? Best perspective.
So I would say someone that comes to mind immediately is, there's a photo from when Jonathan Nethercutt was in...
Yeah, a relative nobody from North Carolina.
Yeah, no, not absolutely. Like, yeah. That's a no name.
Not
at
a
all.
Former MVP.
There's a photo from when he was in college and when they were at Nationals. There's a photo of him that he's just about to rip this massive flick forehand. I mean, it's a beautiful, like, crisp throw. You can see, like, the front of the disc design and everything.
Uh-huh.
And that was the year that USA Ultimate did their, like, rainbow, like, hot stamp on the disc. And it just comes out so beautifully because the way that, like, the light is coming down from the, like...
heavens above.
Yes, yeah, we'll call it the heavens above. It just shines so perfectly. And, like, just, like, Jonathan is, like, he's a very... photogenic person when it comes to like his faces and things, because I mean he's a very like in the moment type of player.
Yeah, fierce.
And some of those are like the best photos, and you know, some people are like, oh my gosh, like I don't look good in this photo, like delete it, like
yeah.
You know, the amount of DMs that would come through with people be like, why would you post this?
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, like, you know, some of those faces are like pretty cool, you know, I don't think that people appreciate the like the in-game moment face as much as they do.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'm not gonna lie, some people don't look as tasteful when they're like playing Ultimate and their photo gets snapped when they're like mid blink or like mid whatever.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
expecting an impact or something.
Exactly.
Or I don't know, I'm trying to think of anyone on the 2019 Breeze roster, but there's a couple players. I know certainly my brother on the Philadelphia Phoenix, his layout face is just a gape-mouthed, like, idiot. I'll say it. I can say it. He's my brother.
And I think Zach Norbaum is also, like, the same type of way.
A tongue waggler?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So we'll find some Norbaum photos.
There was a photo...
He's coming up every 5 minutes on this podcast.
Zach, I love you. In 2016, when Zach and I played club together on Ambiguously Gray, the photo of him and actually one of our other friends, Matt Carter, who is a former Philadelphia Phoenix player, there was a picture that was snapped of the two of them that ended up winning, like, our mixed our male mixed photo of the year.
Yeah.
And essentially, like, both of them are, like, completely, like, jaw-dropped, mouth-open, tongue-wagging, like, everything. And it's just, like, everything, like, nothing about it screams, like, beautiful.
You yeah. know?
It's just, like, complete in-game face, and it's fantastic.
So, I think, oh, so one other question, kind of, we're talking kind of around the league a little bit.
Sure.
You were also part of the 2016 Breeze team that had Brett Matsuka, it had Bob Liu, and it had Jonathan Helton on it. Three guys that had become kind of a traveling wrecking crew around the AUDL.
Fantastic athletes.
This year, they're breaking up. The gang is going at least two different directions, maybe three. I don't know if Bob Liu has signed yet. But Matsuka to Indianapolis, yep. And Helton's going to San Diego.
Yeah.
Do you think, having played with those guys, that a lot of their domination was based on the chemistry they had developed? Or do you think, regardless, they're going to these new locations and they're going to keep ripping it up just like they always have?
So I would say...
Analyst hat.
I would say a little bit to both, right? So I think they're all phenomenal athletes and are going to excel in any opportunity that you provide them. But I think when you keep players together for multiple years at a time, there starts to be a chemistry that is, you know, like untangible. Like it's just something that like the three of them always had together. Cause I believe they've played together for the past 3 years, 4 years, maybe.
I think, the only thing I'll give you is 3 years. It may be a fourth year. You're yeah. Right.
And I think, you know, in the AUDL season being so long and you go through practices and tryouts and, you know, all the way up through the, end of the playoffs, you're with each other for a good like 5 or 6 months, and that like you build that type of chemistry where, you know, if Bob wants to rip a lefty backhand as opposed to his right, like
yeah.
Goose is gonna know where to cut,
right? Or if, and you know he has that in his arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if Brett wants to throw his like, you know, 65 yard hammer down the same third, he's gonna let that rip, and he knows that like Goose or Bob is gonna come down with it because that's just the way they know where to cut.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just like if you think about like the NBA, you separate like a big three, you know, everybody's gonna talk about it for a little bit and everybody keeps eyes on them and sees how they're gonna do. But no, I would definitely say that like that is a trifecta of the AUDL that is like, you know, broken apart now.
Yeah. So you're a little bit more confident maybe. You won't match up. I don't think you will match up against any of those guys in the regular season.
Correct.
But maybe going into a championship weekend, you'd be a little bit more confident about having broken up the Triforce.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, it would be good to you know, see former players again too. Some of my like former teammates. I mean, Brett and I are still like fairly decent friends on Snapchat. And, like,
oh yeah.
Him and I both enjoy, like, we both have cats, so like we'll send each other cat snaps all the time.
Do you get guitar solos on Snapchat too? Yeah, I feel like that could be a thing Brett Matsuka would send.
Probably, potentially.
Okay, so a reoccurring segment on the show is the over-under. I give you some items to react to, ultimate related, non-ultimate related.
Okay.
I'm gauging where your head's at.
Love it.
Let's find out a little about the person that is Anthony McClain.
Let's do it.
First up.
Okay.
Over-underrated breakfast.
Oh, breakfast. As a whole, I think breakfast is underrated. I am a huge fan of French toast.
Okay.
I verbally have put this on my Twitter account, that French toast is better than pancakes and waffles. And I will defend that until forever.
Better than pancakes or waffles, or better than pancakes and waffles?
Better than pancakes and waffles.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that's a bold statement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think there may have been, like, one person that may have, like, agreed with me. And I think there was, like, a nice little Twitter chain of, like, you're wrong, Anthony. I just think French
toast... How often do you make French toast?
I would say I actually don't make French toast that often.
But that's why you like it so much, because it's so rare for you. It's a very simple thing to make.
But I also, it doesn't help that I live 500 feet away from an IHOP.
Oh, okay, sure. Yep, so you're getting French toast whenever you need it.
Yep.
French toast on demand. Over-underrated corgis.
Oh. Corgis are hands down the... I would say they're still underrated, in my opinion. I would, like... I love my cats to death, but I like the...
Yeah, we're swimming in cats here. I did an on-site podcast today, so we've got cats in my peripherals.
Okay, so I just want to say that my parents own six. So
wow.
They own six cats and three dogs, and, you know, we have a little...
Pet people.
Yeah, we have a domestic zoo, and here we have two cats at my townhouse. But, like, once I become...
What are your cats' names?
Here we have Coors.
Coors.
So like the beer.
Sure.
And then we also have Charlie.
Okay.
And then at home, we don't need to go through all of their names, but some of them are
unless you could do it like in a song or very, very rapidly. So, we don't have time for all six cats.
Some of them are named after hurricanes, and then other ones are just kind of named sporadically.
Hurricane cats?
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Corgis are the cutest dog I've ever seen.
Well, then why not trade these cats in for corgis?
So I currently live in a townhouse that does not allow us to have large animals, and cats were the only thing that we, like, agreed upon that was acceptable.
Okay.
Because, you know, I would say corgis are, like, small to mid-sized dogs.
Okay.
And we also currently don't have much of a backyard, and I kind of want to live in a space where I can, like, you know, let a big dog run. You know what I mean?
A medium dog run.
Yeah,
at best.
Ooh, a little dog run.
A little stubby-legged
dog.
They're
just so cute.
Do you have a corgi name already lined up?
Yes, I do. So I am a...
One day there will be a blank McLean, the corgi.
Yes, there will be a Dunkin', the corgi.
Okay, perfect.
So I am a big Dunkin' Donuts. If you can see where this is going with the French toast and
yep, sure.
Anything's with sugar in it, like I have a really big sweet tooth. But I'm gonna name it Dunkin', but it'll be like D-U-N-C-A-N. Yeah, Dunkin'.
Okay.
As opposed to like Dunkin' Donuts, but like Dunkin' in a different
like the name Dunkin'.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to branded. How much? I mean, would there be a sponsorship that Dunkin' Donuts could sign with you to get it to be it's not even Dunkin' Donuts anymore. They just changed to Dunkin'.
Yeah, they did. They completely rebranded and dropped it. Yeah.
Yeah. So is there a sponsorship deal that Dunkin' could approach you with to get the spelling changed to be brand worthy?
I would be 100% open to that.
Yeah.
I know that. I think it was Adidas or ASICS or one of the shoe companies just did like a Dunkin' Donuts shoe, and like, you know, my sister had sent it to me and was like, you should get these, and I was just like, maybe not, but
Dunkin' Donuts themed shoes, cleats maybe on the field.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Last one, a short segment today, but I gotta know your opinion on another DC Breeze great recently re-signed with the Raleigh Flyers, Chuck Cantone.
So Chuck is one of my favorite people.
Does that make him over or underrated, though?
Is he over or underrated?
He's also a guy that kind of played that plug role a little bit for the Breeze, a guy that put up in 2016 almost as many O points as D points and 150-odd points in both lines. So one of the most played and splitting his time very equally.
Yeah. So I feel like if I say that he's overrated, that almost seems like it's not a compliment, right? I feel like I need to say that he's an underrated player.
Yeah.
Because Chuck is one of those players where someone has his Xbox controller, is the way that I like to phrase it, right? Like, Chuck could be standing straight up and down and, like, not even moving, and then all of a sudden he's, like, completely parallel with the ground. And you're just like, I have no idea how you do that, but someone's got his Xbox controller and is essentially pushing his trigger button.
I like that metaphor.
That's, like, the perspective I give when I see people who can, like, lay out constantly and just do anything that you want them to.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Chuck was one of the most fun and athletic people to watch during the 2016 Breeze season. I'm actually curious because I haven't caught up with him recently, but I guess he must have moved maybe down to North Carolina, or is he still in Virginia?
I don't know. I mean, he was based in Richmond, which you'd think was a play. I mean, it's even when he played in DC, right? He was hauling up here. So if the Triangle area is only 2.5 hours south, maybe he can do it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say underrated, and that I, without a doubt, know that he's going to tear up that South Division.
Yeah, where I would chime in and maybe even agree with that, even though I think I'm supposed to be bipartisan here, but I agree that he's underrated just because I think a signing of his caliber that went, you know, relatively unheralded by the general media of the AUDL, as they talked about, you know, retooling Raleigh Flyers, and they talked about the headlines of all the losses that the Raleigh Flyers took. A team with Chuck Cantone is a flexible, versatile Xbox controller team.
I completely agree. I think, you know, and especially with the growth of the league and the amount of players that are continually trying out, there are not necessarily like these diamonds in the rough, but there are these players that just don't get the recognition that they should. And then when they go out there, they're dropping, you know, like 5 points and like 4 assists a game. And then all of a sudden everybody's turning their heads going, wait, like, but what about the other 6 guys that like we were supposed to be paying attention to?
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool about this league is that there's like opportunities for individuals to shine every weekend of the season.
One thing I always do towards the end of a segment of Hot Air is I try to turn over the mic to my guest. It doesn't need to be Ultimate related. It can be about your general life, a public service announcement.
Okay.
Jonathan Neely literally once talked about identity theft on this program.
Okay.
So whatever you got for us, what's on your mind? Tell us a little bit more about the person that is you.
So the person that is me. So I'm probably going to give a public service announcement to just anyone in the Ultimate community, and this goes to someone or something that's near and dear to my heart, is don't screenshot your UltiPhotos photos.
Oh, sure.
You know, spend the $3.50, in which it actually is, to just download it, because I don't think a lot of people recognize that that money goes straight to the photographer and helps them buy either new gear or cover their travel costs and things like that. Yes, the photographers are compensated from the tournaments and things that they come to, but it's not always everything. So I think when they really get that additional compensation that you just ripping it or screenshotting it doesn't do anyone good. Sure, you may get a couple likes off of it, but support the photographers that are doing it as well.
Well said.
Yeah, and I would say that the second thing that I would say would be that the Wildwood Beach Ultimate Frisbee Tournament is 100% underrated as well.
Near and dear to your heart?
Near and dear to my heart. So I actually, grew up in New Jersey and would go down to Wildwood every single summer since I was out the womb.
I'm surprised you don't have more saggy tattoos. Because I don't think, even though you're a young man, I think that the second you get a tattoo in Wildwood, it instantly begins to sag a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I would say, I don't recommend getting any, piercings or things down like that down there. But 10 out of 10 would recommend anybody to attend that tournament.
Sure.
Just because I think it's always, a really, really fun time. And, it's always the fact that UltiWorld does an entire article on the team names that are going to Wildwood.
That's right.
I think it's always super appreciative.
It's part of this special and unique culture that has grown a hydra of heads.
Yeah.
Now that the breeze exists, now that you can go to Fool's Fest or Wildwood or these fun tournaments with just your friends and people you used to play with, alma mater, that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would say, if I can, we'll do one more.
One more? I'll give you one more.
I'm going to say adopt, don't shop. And we'll leave it at that.
Boom, there it is.
Love it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Hot Air. I'm signing off now, so adios.